Thank you very much. It's actually good to be here. I wasn't sure that I would. The last time I had this surgery done, I was out for several days and just assumed that would happen this time. But I'm happy to say, and my voice, you can hear it in my voice. It's not very strong, so Mr. Weiss will have to be continually turning the volume up on me as I go. But this is totally different than the last one. The last one, when I went home, I woke up the next day and I just felt bad, and I never got over it. This, I woke up this morning and felt great. So I know I probably don't sound great, but I, compared to the way I felt the last time, also I was completely out during the surgery, and for whatever reason I was completely awake during this one. I was even talking to him during this surgery, which I'm sure irritated him to no end, because I'm a talker. But anyway, at the end, I asked him if I could. What he had done this time was taken the last remaining piece of the wisdom tooth out, and I asked him if I could get it. So, like a little kid, not that I wanted to put it under my pillow. That's not what. But it's just like a shard of glass. I'm just amazed that that it didn't cause any more problems than it did. It had sharp edges all the way around it. So I think that was cutting into the nerve. So I appreciate your prayers. I don't know how much it will hurt once it's completely done, because I'm on pain medicine right now, but it, again, is so much better than what it was. So thank you very much for your prayers. I would just add a couple of more announcements that came in. I did, knowing that I would be asleep yesterday, I did the announcements earlier, but one came in afterwards. Let me see if I can find it here. This is for Mr. Diaz. Did you read the one for Mr. Diaz? I didn't. Okay. So I don't know that this has actually gotten out to everyone yet. It says, please pass along to all brethren. It says, once again, God has heard you, and my most recent test came back clear. We humbly thank all of you so much for your love and concern, Tom Diaz. So every for the last year or so, every test that he's gone in to have, it has come back either no change or change for the good. So we're very thankful for that, and he seems to be in good shape. And please continue to pray for him. He, if you don't know the story behind Mr. Diaz, he had issues when in his younger years that took away one of his kidneys, and later on in life he got cancer, and the cancer medication as well as the chemo would have potentially damaged his last remaining kidney. So he opted not to go the traditional route and to go a homeopathic route, which every doctor that he had told him that was stupid and he was going to die. And he's still here, so let's keep him in our prayers, and we thank you very much for that. And I do appreciate everyone for your prayers on my behalf, too. I may not sound like it, but I feel great in comparison to what I did going into the surgery yesterday. I was in Allen Saturday night, Sunday, and Monday of last week for meetings, and I couldn't even participate in them. I just had my hand in my jaw the whole time. And they turned to me and say, Mr. Sandlins, what do you think? And there was just, I couldn't even get a word out. So it was kind of a last week was tough. Called Marlis on Monday morning. I said, it was you know how sometimes men can get when they're not feeling well. It was very terse. Give me schedule for surgery. Don't ask me any questions. Make it happen. That was my note to my wife. And I got back, okay. And she did. She got it taken care of. So good for her. Men don't do well when we're in pain. Ladies, you probably know that already. All right, let's go ahead and go into the sermon today. It is probably split sermon length. I did that on purpose, not knowing how long I would be able to speak. And let's wait and see if it's going to come up. All right, hopefully you can see that. What I want to do today is explore an aspect of prophecy that we've heard. I mean, if you've been in the church the last 30 or 40 years, you've heard this a lot. And it's about what it would be like at the end of the age. So there's nothing really new here. But I thought that it would be good to refocus on this. I actually did a similar sermon to this probably about 8 or 9 years ago. And when I got to looking at what I had said 8 or 9 years ago, there has been so many changes in the world just in those last 8 or 9 years that I thought it would be good to give this again, even though you wouldn't have heard the first one that I gave back in Dallas. But it's something that we focus on from time to time, and I think it's appropriate. Sometimes in the church, we use this as just one of those sentences that we pull out of context and say, oh, well, this is going to happen in the end of the age, and boy, can't we see that all around us. But I think if you actually stop and look at it, it will be interesting how much of this we hadn't really thought about. And when you all put it together in a package, I think that it'll make more sense. So we're going to talk about prophecy today, but about what's going to happen to knowledge at the end of the age. Now, you all know where I'm going with this, and that's good. But again, this is going to be interesting to review. It doesn't obviously help us set dates because we've been using the same verses for the last 40 years and Christ hasn't returned yet. However, I think that it will help us to focus on events as they surround us. So, and to make this a little shorter, I've put all the, with the exception of one verse, I've put it all up on the slide so that it'll save just a little bit of time. But what I want to specifically do is I want to cover a prophecy that's in Daniel chapter 12. Now, to get the setting for that, I want to read the first three verses of Daniel chapter 12, and it will give us an idea of where Daniel is headed with this. And then either the very next slide, or the last slide, or the next to the last slide, I'm going to come back to this again. So here's what we are told in Daniel chapter 12, verse 1. At that time, Michael, one of the archangels, will stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. And there will be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. And at that time, your people, or the people of God, will be delivered, everyone who would be found written in the book. Verse 2. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth will awake. We know this is the resurrection. Some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. So obviously this is an end time prophecy, talking about what's going to happen right at and even after the return of Christ. Verse 3, those who are wise will shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. And I want to focus on the last verse there because there's two parts to it. One says that if you're wise, you'll shine. But the second part says that if you are wise and you shine, you will help turn others to wisdom and to shining. What is it that the church is supposed to be doing as we go toward the end of this age? Now, the time frame of this, if you, I'm not going to turn to it, but if you back up a few verses in your Bible to Daniel 11, verse 40, it talks about at the time of the end, when the king of the north and the king of the south will start pushing against each other. We've given sermons on this in the past. So the time frame, again, of this prophecy is at the end time. We notice several things about this. It says that God's people are going to be watched over by the archangel Michael. I'm really glad Michael's there. I don't know what he's doing right now, but if you read in the scriptures about what Michael does, he's the guy with the sword in his hand. Gabriel is also an archangel. He's the one that does a lot of talking. He's like the mouthpiece that God uses to talk. But Michael's the guy with the sword in his hand. He's to put it into 21st century parlance, he's the guy with the lightsaber. And he takes care of the people of God. And he's going to do that. He's going to stand watch over God's people during a time of trouble, during a time of trial. Now, sometimes it's hard to see this entire picture as we look at what we know Daniel is telling us here. We see that there are events that Daniel saw, probably that he had trouble understanding himself, and that he put down in writing for us to be able to know that there were going to be issues at the end of the age. And he said that some would be wise, and he also said that some who were wise not only would look and listen to the wisdom that God was giving us, but that they would also be able to help other people. When we look at knowledge and prophecy, we always get drawn to a specific, let me get this font size down a little bit here, I can see it. We always get drawn to a specific prophecy. And I'm going to read it in just a minute, but I wanted to show you this picture. Not a very good picture for those of you that have it, but it was the best one that I could find as I was putting this together. This is an olive, or this is a fig tree. How many of you have fig trees? Anybody have fig trees? We've got several with fig trees. In the Olivet prophecy, Jesus Christ wanted to discuss end time events. The disciples came up to him and said, when are you going to return? What's the signs we're supposed to be looking for? Give us a clue. And I would imagine, in my imagination, that he was walking along the roads with his disciples and a fig tree was right there. And he goes, well, okay, I'll let Let's look at this fig tree here. And he stops and he just gives this amazing parable based on a tree that just happened to be right along the side of the road. Very good one. So what I'd like to do is go to Matthew 24, verse 32 and 33, and I want to read what he says here, because we read in Daniel that there's going to be a time at the end that's going to be pretty tough, but that the wise will have some understanding that the rest of the world won't. The disciples want to know when this is going to happen. They were reading the book of Daniel, or the scroll of Daniel, in that time. They didn't have books. And they knew something was going to happen, so they asked Christ, when is it going to happen? So he says to them, now learn this parable from the fig tree. When its branches have become tender and put forth leaves, know that the summer is near and at hand. Verse 33, so you also, when you see all these things, the things that Christ was talking about, know that it is near, even at the doors. The fig trees bud at a certain time of year. Now, assuming they do it here, the same as the Middle East, they would bud in the spring, and then in the fall, you're going to start to see some of those flowers become fruit, and the fruit gets pollinated, the fruit starts to grow. That's this idea, or the blossoms get pollinated, the fruit starts to grow, and that by the time summer happens, you know about when the figs are going to be ready. You can see the pattern along the way. You've been watching the same tree year after year after year after year. So what's he telling us? You can look at the fig tree and know when the figs are going to come out because you've been watching this fig tree do it for decade after decade. You all know what that's like, anybody that has fruit trees. The signs will be there, Christ said. Just like the signs are going to be there for when the figs will be ready, the signs will be there to let you know when the end is going to occur. He's telling us that we can have a good idea of when to expect it. So what I want to do today is I want to, sometimes, you know, the old saying is you can't see the trees for the forest. I'd like for us to step away from the forest and just look at the tree. I want to look at a couple of things that Jesus Christ said in prophecy. Now, if I were to cover everything in prophecy, I'd be here for 15 sermons, and I would be covering all this detail. So what I want to do is I just want to kind of push all that to the side, and I want to look at one specific thing that he told us that we should look at today and see if we can see the leaves on the trees and make sense of something that's going to happen as the age starts to come to a close. He's telling us that if we sit down and we look at this, that sometimes I think in life we get in such a hurry that we can look right past some of the things that he said. We can quote scripture and not really listen to what it's saying. We're good at that because we've been reading the same scriptures over and over. Sometimes I like to read or listen to, we're going through the Bible reading program this time this year, and I'm listening to it in the English Standard Version on a tape just to get a little different take on it. Because sometimes I can start a sentence, the meek will, and you can all say inherit the earth. But you say it so fast, you don't maybe listen to what's being said. So today I want to go through one. And then I want to step away from what's being said there. And I want to look at what the world is like today to see how it fits the pattern of one of the things that's going to happen at the end of the age. So let's look at it. Daniel chapter 12 and verse 4. Daniel chapter 12 and verse 4. With these things in mind, let's look at one specific prophecy. But you, Daniel, shut up the words, seal the book until the time of the end, for many shall run to and fro, and knowledge will be increased. Daniel kept pestering the angel. You would be doing the same thing. If you had an angel that would come down and say, I know everything about what's going to happen at the end, wouldn't you be going, well, what about this? And what about this? And what about this? And finally, the angel said, we're done. That's all you get. Got no more. Seal the words up. This is it. Put it down. Write down what you saw, but you're not going to understand it until the end. And notice what he says here. Many will run to and fro, and knowledge will be increased. Sometimes we kind of take those as two separate things, but they're not. They're in the same sentence. They're saying, as we get closer to the end of the age, something's going to start happening. Knowledge is going to start exploding. Now, we've heard sermons like this, I'm sure, for the last 30 years, 40 years, for those of you that have been around for a long time. But there are a lot of people in here who haven't been around for the last 30 or 40 years, a lot of our children that are growing up in the church. And I think that this will be new to you if you haven't looked at this before. Hopefully it will be. But we know that if we kind of step back and look at what he's saying here, before the time of trouble, as never before, before the wise will shine and the foolish won't, before knowledge, before the end of the age will happen, it says that knowledge will increase. So how does that play into end time prophecy? Why would that be mentioned as one of the clues? I would imagine most of you have never thought about that. Okay, well, God says knowledge is going to be increased. Well, why is that important to end time prophecy? Something is going to happen at the end of the age. This explosion of knowledge is going to cause something. It's going to cause the wise to understand, and it's going to cause those that aren't wise to get further muddled in what's happening in the world. In case you haven't focused on it for a while, I'd like to review this and see what we can do to review our watch of what's happening in the world. I don't know what it is about that mat, but I keep pushing it left. What I want to do is I want to give you something. I was shown this probably 8 to 10 years ago. This is a company that puts this out, and it's, if you can see it down here, if you want to write it down there, it is called Did You Know? And it's from a group that back in 2008 was one of the first times they put it out. It came out under a PowerPoint that says shift happens. You have to be careful how you say that. Shift happens. Did you know? And it starts to, what it is, is it's a bunch of guys that sat down and said, what is the world like today that it wasn't like when our fathers and our grandfathers were around? Because again, sometimes we get so encapsulated in the middle of the forest that we don't stop and say, this tree has really grown. Have you ever done that? Have you ever gone away? I moved away from Crawfordsville, and we had a tree that was 4 or 5 feet tall, and I went back 10 years later, and it's massive. Well, I'm sure every year after year, as my mom was watching that grow, it wasn't that big of a deal to her, but all of a sudden, I went back, and I just realized how much this tree has grown. So what I want to do today is I want to go through a few slides. It's not a lot, but this is a PowerPoint deck that you can see on YouTube. If you're interested in watching it, it's actually quite interesting. It's going to show more than what I show here. It's just got some pretty little lilty music in the background, and it's just flashing slides. So I did screen captures of this. So Did You Know, based on David Rose, Carl Fish, and Scott McCloud, and every year they come out with what is happening in the world. So as we go through this today, I want you to think about what this prophecy in Daniel 12 was saying. I've given you a lot of things that are going to happen. There's going to be a time of trouble, since never has been. But close, seal the words up, and at the time of the end, there will be an increase in knowledge. What does that mean for 2016? Did you know more than 83 million people will be born this year? 7.3 billion people in total, and 83 million of them will be born this year alone. Now, what does that mean for the sake of prophecy? That's just a number. Sometimes numbers can get so big we forget what they mean. So let me put this in perspective. Every year we have more and more people that are coming into the world. So let's think about the fact that Jesus Christ said in Matthew 24, preach the gospel to the world. Well, did that stop with the disciples? Well, no. The disciples wrote it down, but there was a first century church and a second and a third and a fourth century church, and we're still going today. So we now have to teach people that are coming into the world right now. There are 83 million babies being born today, more born every day. Those of us that grew up in the church are getting further and further away from our past. When I first came into the church in the 1960s, church was done a certain way. There was a certain way that the gospel was preached. There was a certain way that we talked to the world. There was a certain way that people came into the church, but those times are changing. Schools today are teaching our children very different than schools taught when I was in school. And the way I was taught in school was very different the way Marlis and I's parents were taught. Marlis was a school teacher in a one-room, her mom was a school teacher in a one-room schoolhouse and taught all like K through 12. And there maybe were 15 students or whatever. I mean, that we just don't teach like that anymore. A lot of times, schools that are teaching things today are teaching things in a different way. They're teaching us that what your parents knew was wrong, and let us give you what's right. In other words, you're being mistaught. Now, that even started to occur when I was in high school. I had one teacher I can remember who was a science teacher when I was in eighth grade. And he kept telling us, anyone that believes in religion is just foolish, because obviously that evolution is the key. We didn't hear that from very many professors, but we heard it from one or two. You go to a university now, or even to a high school, and you have very few people that will stand up and say, by the way, evolution is bunk, and the truth of God is that there was a creation. We're being told today, and our children are being given today, a new history. And what I want to do is I want to consider, as we look at these 83 million people that are being born into the world this year, consider how this person that's going to be born this coming year is going to be taught the truth of God and is going to be taught the errors of Satan. Because this person is going to grow up in the next few years, and they're going to be taught. So let's look and see how this works. This is another slide. The U.S. Department of Labor estimates that today's learner, so kids that are entering into the job market, by the age of 38 will have gone through 10 to 14 different jobs. Do you remember what it used to be like when my father was young and when his father was young and even when I was young? A lot of kids went into the jobs that their parents had. They were taught by their parents. If my dad was a railroad worker, which my grandfather was, my dad would work on the railroad. You would get into that where your fathers would teach you a trade and you would learn from them. But now, kids don't go through that anymore. They don't stay with one job. They go from job to job to job to job to job. And they learn. The idea is, and I was even taught, probably 10 years ago when I was in telecommunications, if you stay in the same job more than 2 years, you're wasting your talent. Because if you switch jobs, you can get more money. And if you switch jobs, you can get more power, more prestige. There was nothing in there about whether or not you're actually learning anything or whether you're making your company a better place. It was all about you can get a better position and you can get more money. That's what's being taught today. So as our learners today go through all these different jobs, they're learning in a different style than their grandparents, many of whom are still alive today. In fact, the jobs that I went through, I was at the cutting edge of telecommunications. I was there right as cell phones were coming out. You remember those goofy looking cell phones that they first came out with back in the 80s? That was cutting edge technology. I can remember teaching at Ambassador College in the 80s, early 80s, saying that one of these days everyone would have a personal telephone that they would carry in their pocket, or at the time a lanyard around your neck. That was how I saw it. And that nobody would have a home phone anymore. And I remember the kids in the class laughed at me, saying that I was just daydreaming. And yet look what's happened now. The job that I had back then of these big massive cables and all of that just seems silly based on what we have today. But again, let's wait and see what this does as we think about how learners are learning today. I thought this was an interesting slide. Did you know that the top in-demand jobs barely existed 10 years ago? Look at some of these, and you can even recognize what these are. An iOS and Android developer. 10 years ago, we didn't have iOS and we didn't have Androids, at least not like we have it today. Cloud service specialist. If you would ask my father, of course, it's not alive, but if my dad were alive today and you'd say, what is a cloud service specialist? He'd say, I don't know, is that a guy that flies in an airplane and sees clouds so that they'll rain? He wouldn't know what that meant. Most of you in here know what it means. Social media intern? Give me a break. There's still something about social media that seems really hokey to me. But yet, in the church, we have people hired to do social media, and we need it. It's an important thing. Data scientist, a big data architect, digital marketing manager. I remember when analog was first going into digital in telecommunications in the 70s, and I used to teach a class on how analog got converted to digital, and I used the idea of how CDs were made to show how analog got changed to pulse amplitude, to pulse code modulation, and then into digital. And it just would glaze the eyes of kids today. Well, now you almost have to say it in reverse. What is analog? They don't even know what that is. Analog is those cute little records that Dad has, those 33 and a thirds that nobody knows how to play anymore. So the top in-demand jobs barely existed 10 years ago. Okay, what does that mean? Let's look at it from another perspective. We are currently preparing students for jobs that don't exist yet. So think about it. Let's say that you've got someone out there. I always do this, but Ethan or Maddie or Chloe or you look at Althea. You look at the people that are 10, 12, 13, 14, 15 years old. They're going to be in the job market 10 years from now. 10 years from now, the jobs that they're going to be doing are what? So we're preparing them for a job that doesn't even exist yet. How do you teach someone now to prepare for a job that doesn't exist? So we are currently preparing students for jobs that don't exist yet using technologies that haven't been invented in order to solve problems we don't even know are problems yet. So there are job functions that are coming we don't even know about yet. And yet we're trying to prepare our students for jobs that they don't even know what technology's coming out there yet. I'm a big techie nerd, you know that. I go out and I look all the time at some of the new things that are being developed, and they're amazing to me. Stuff that we dreamed about in the Star Trek universe in the 1960s are becoming reality. So we are now training kids to have jobs, and they're not even sure what their jobs are going to be yet. The jobs that I was doing in the 1970s and 80s working on wireless telecommunication, that even 10, 15 years before when I was just getting into telecommunications, no one thought about wireless communications. It wasn't even on darkening the door. What have we got next? All right, let's go on. For the first time in history, we've got four generations working in the same workforce together. And you can see them all there, the traditionalists. They're the peoples that were born before 1945. They're the guys that always went to work in a suit. My dad would have been in this. He always wore a suit and tie. He always had a top hat on and carried a briefcase to work. You know the type. Well, then came the baby boomers. That's from 1945 to 1950-something anyway, or 1960-something anyway. That's my era. I got rid of, and I should have brought it up here as a prop, I got rid of the briefcase and I carry a satchel. That's because that's what my generation did. Then we've got the Gen Xers. They were the guys that first started slinging bags over their shoulders. These were the guys that would go to school with all their bags in a bag. I actually thought that was pretty cool because when I went to school, I had them just all under my arm and I'd often drop them on the way to school. And then somewhere along the line, somebody figured out, hey, we can get a bag and put them in it. And so they went to school with a school bag. Then you have the millennials that are even different yet in how they view things and how they see things. We see these when we take kids to camp. If you have taken your kid to camp, you'll know what this is like. And we've got them in here that did it, and it's true all around the world. We have to virtually pull their electronic devices out of their hands when we go to camp because they're tied to them. And I understand that. That's the age that they learn in and that they grow in. They learn off of those devices. They don't learn the way we learned, by reading a book or by, you know, even listening to a radio program. We'll talk more about that. So now you've got these same four people that are in the workplace at the same time. But guess what? They all learn differently and they communicate differently. So you've got the traditionalist. Write me a letter. I got a letter from a lady the other day in this congregation. Instead of calling me and saying she was going to be out of town for a couple of weeks, she wrote me a letter. Put it in the mailbox with a stamp and sent it to me. Why? Because she grew up in that generation. That's how you communicated with people. The phone was there for an emergency. I can remember the phone would ring and my mom would answer it and she'd say, it's long distance. And everybody would get really quiet in the house like, wow, someone from outside of Crawfordsville, Indiana is calling us. That was just unheard of. So, you know, you wonder who's died or who's getting married, right? Because that was the only time you got long-distance calls. Then you had the boomers that came along that got more used to the telephone, and they started using those. You had the Gen X that they don't call people, they emailed. And then you've got the millennials that text. What's coming next? This next generation are going to think you people that text and that you do Instagram and you do Facebook and Snapchat, the next generation that comes along is going to see that as old-fashioned. You are absolutely going to be dinosaurs because of what next is coming. That's the way it works. Over 3 billion people use the Internet. Out of 7.3 billion people, almost half the people in the world use the Internet. I was actually watching a a program on YouTube the other day that showed how there are places that don't have electricity, but they have the internet. They have the ability to charge their iPads or whatever by a solar array, and then they have satellite service to be able to provide them with cell service and internet. So as long as it's not a cloudy day for 3 or 4 days, they just charge their phones up and then they can use them. They charge their digital devices up and can use them. They have the internet and they're sitting out in the middle of the, they have no running water and they have no electricity, but they've got the internet. Isn't that amazing? Out of 7.3 billion people, almost half of the world's population use it. There are 100 billion searches on Google every month. Have you ever asked the question, how did we ever find out anything before Google? That's even a word in our vocabulary now. Go Google it, or go Bing it, or whatever it is that you may use. You realize that's a really new thing. Remember when Mr. Armstrong was talking about learning about the truth and about the Sabbath, what he had to do? He had to drive, whatever it was, 90 miles to the Portland Library and sit down. Remember libraries? I think we still have them. Does Covington still have a library? I imagine they probably do. I don't know. I don't know how many people go through them. We Google things now. That's how this generation does it. It's very different than how it was done in the past. And I just thought I would throw this light in here just for fun. 1 out of 6 couples that get married in the U.S. last year met online. When I was going through the dating process, we met in college. Some kids got met in high school. There are lots of different ways. But 1 in 6 now meet in some online dating service. That's astounding to me that our world has come that far. The kids today, for those of you old people that are over 30, the world is so different now from our teenagers that it is hard for us to understand how digitally connected they really are. I can give you an example of something several years ago where when we were starting to have some issues in the church, this was 5-6 years ago, I would get emails from people about, so-and-so's resigned from the church. Did you hear this? So-and-so's minister's out. Before I would get an email from the church saying that so-and-so's resigned, I already had heard about it on our version of social media back then. Things get out there really quickly now. And once it's out there, it can't be withdrawn. That's one of the reasons why we have us older people have so much trouble with the younger people. Don't put something out there because you cannot pull it back. The second it's out there, it's out of your hands, it's out of your control. So we're concerned about that because we have seen what can happen with it. We see kids that put something out there and then they end up getting in trouble. They end up committing suicide because they can't pull something back that is a video or some picture that they wish weren't there. But we learn in a different way today. Our kids learn differently. Turn to Matthew 28. Matthew chapter 28, verses 19 and 20. We all know what this is saying. This is the church's commission. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations. Baptize them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Teach them to observe all things that I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. So, again, what is that saying? How long should we preach the gospel? It says it right here. Till the end of the age. There are people who, and I mean no disrespect, but there are people who felt that after Mr. Armstrong died, we should stop preaching the gospel because it was all done. Brethren, it doesn't say that. This was Jesus Christ himself speaking, saying you need to continue to make disciples, baptize them, teach them all the way to the end of the age. Now, what I would like for you to notice about this specific scripture is, what technology did Jesus Christ say we're supposed to use to get the gospel out? What was the technology at the time that he wrote this? You got on your donkey and you or walked to the next town with your staff in your hand, and you would set up some meeting somewhere in somebody's home or in the synagogue, and you would preach. Is that the only technology that we're allowed to use? God doesn't say that. There's no command here to teach by walking from village to village. How do we do this commission today? What I would like to do is tie it back to the very first thing that I said today. Tie it back to the fig trees. When the figs are starting to grow and when they're ripening, we need to realize that the time is near. How does that fit into preaching the gospel? How do we warn a world? How do we teach our children? Do we say, no, sorry, I can't ever use an iPad or an Android tablet because when God did it, he walked from town to town, so that's the only way I can do it. Let's use a couple of examples here. I know that there are people, in the past 10 years, I've had at least 50 people tell me that the reason why they didn't come to the United Church of God and now won't come to Kagwa is because we don't have a TV program on WGN on Sunday mornings. It was important to them. How did people learn about the Sabbath, etc.? How did it happen in the 1930s and the 1940s and the 1950s? Almost everyone had something in their house. What was it? A radio. Remember those days? You guys, you have no idea what we're talking about now. The center focus of the house was the radio. When you looked at all of the furniture in the house, it surrounded the radio. My mom used to tell me when she was a kid that they would sit down at night after dinner and they would turn the radio on and they would listen to news, but they also would listen to programs like Amos and Andy, which were like comedy routines, Fibber McGee and Molly. I even bought my mom one time on cassette deck all the old Fibber McGee and Molly's just because that's what she remembered sitting down. The Lone Ranger. Some of you guys may think of that as a TV show. That was a radio show. Back in the 1930s, I'm assuming in the 1930s, somewhere around in there anyway. So this is what you did. Everybody in America sat down in the evenings and they turned the radio on. So what media did we start to use in preaching the gospel? We used the media that everyone was using. That was radio. Everybody did. It was the most immediate source of news. If something happened overseas in World War II or whatever, you know, there was a way to get that back and people would listen to the radio. Immediate news. Now think about that. It's not so immediate, is it? But from the standpoint of what was going on at the time, that supplemented the newspaper. Almost everybody read the newspaper every day. There was another way that people used to get information. I'm going to take a chance here. There may be nobody that knows what I'm talking about here, but there was, we had radio and we had newspapers. There was another way that, and I say we, used to learn about what was going on in World War II. And it came out once a week. Who can think of what? Just see. Newsreels. Where were they played? The movie theaters. All you kids are going, are you kidding me? That was how we got information about World War II, is we would go to the movie theater and watch the latest, you know, Green Hornet or whatever was coming out on the movie theater. And before the movie started, they would play newsreels. This is what happened this week in World War II. The Americans attacked the Japanese bombers, and they chose these planes. And boom. And then there'd be some patriotic music playing in the background. And that was how we got a lot of information about World War I and World War II, were newsreels at the movie theater. Everybody went to the movie theaters almost every week because they wanted that information. It was a marketing thing, sure, to get you to... My dad used to tell me that he used to go to the movie theaters with a nickel or a dime. Sorry, it was a dime. A nickel would get him in the door, and then the other nickel would get him Coke for the rest of the day. My dad was a good guy. And he'd stay there all day. It was on a Saturday, growing up as a kid, and he would just sit there at the movie theater. Later, it changed to television. And then television became the media that most people used. And when I was growing up, we had the radio in the front room. And when I was very young, the TV was off to the side. But slowly, as the years went by, the radio kind of got relegated until eventually it was in a back room. And the TV was the central focus. And all the furniture in the house surrounded the TV set. And that was what people watched. So guess what? Mr. Armstrong said, we need to switch over to television. Do you know there were people in the 1940s and 50s that left the church over the fact that Mr. Armstrong stopped using radio as much and started going to television? Because that's not how you preach the gospel. I'm here to tell you, as knowledge gets increased, we've got to follow the technology and use what's available to us. So some people in the church felt that we had, again, to have a Sunday morning telecast on WGN, and that what we did as a church was wrong, etc. But I want you to go back again to what it says in Matthew 24:14. I've got it up here again. Gospel of the kingdom will be preached to the world as a witness to all nations. How does it say to do that? It doesn't. It just says that it's got to be preached. To be honest, I don't use the TV very often anymore for my news. Right? I mean, I sometimes still feel like compelled to sit down in the evening with my supper and turn the news on. But all I get is just political nonsense now. So if I want to watch the news, I go to Fox.com or CNN.com or BBC.com and I can just get a quick snapshot. It's just too slow to watch a 30-minute news broadcast on TV. I'd rather scan the articles and get the one I want. And I'm the old guy. Imagine how kids, as they're growing up now, are going to want to get this information. Going back to this slideshow again, it is estimated that a week's worth of the New York Times is more information that a person would have come across in their lifetime in the 18th century. There is more information in a week's worth of the New York Times than a person would have learned during their entire lifetime in the 1700s. Why? The proliferation of knowledge wasn't there. You didn't have radio. You didn't have television. You didn't have even a good printed word. I mean, you had newspapers somewhat, but it still was localized. You didn't have world coverage. You didn't have world press. There's so much information out there. Now, how can you possibly contain in your brain everything that's even contained in the New York? Do you have time to read every word of the New York Times every day, and yet all that information is there? There are 8 zettabytes, did you even know there was such a thing as a zettabyte, of unique data created in 2015. What is a zettabyte? It is more knowledge than in the previous 5,000 years put together, combined. That virtually goes back to the time of Adam and Eve, goes back to the time of the flood. So now in 1 year, we're producing more knowledge than in the previous 5,000 years of human history. That's how much data is out there now. It's how much new information is coming. That's astounding. Again, read the scripture. At the end, knowledge will be increased. There's going to be a way for this knowledge to get out there different than what we have now. The amount of new technical information is doubling every 2 years. Now, we've heard that before. That's nothing new, but I'd like for you to think about what that means. We put a student in a 4-year technical college, and by the time that person is a junior, everything that they learned in their freshman year is outdated. How do you teach someone in a 4-year technical school when, before they're even halfway through school, the information that they were taught in their freshman year is old data? There's got to be a new way to teach because we've got to do it faster. It's got to get out there. You know, sometimes those of us that have been around for a long time, we want to slow the world back down to where we can feel comfortable again, but the world doesn't move in our speed anymore. It moves differently, and we have to be able to react to that. So the growth of technology, and you can kind of see that arrow there, that for the first several thousand years, it didn't grow that much, and then all of a sudden, when we got into the information age, it's just exploded. Now, again, go back and think about what Daniel said in Daniel 12. Shut the words up, seal the book to the end of the age, for many will run to and fro, and knowledge will be increased. The rate of growth in technology is staggering. Now, let's see how that has affected something as simple as the English language. The first time I did this was in 2008. At that time, there were 540,000 words in the English language in 2008. In 2016, there are now 1,025,000. It has doubled. The number of words in English has doubled. The word Google was not in the dictionary 10 years ago. The word data mining, or the term data mining, wasn't there. Nobody even knew who that was. So why is there a need for so many words? We have now 10,000 times as many words as Shakespeare had available to him when he was writing his sonnets. There are so many more words now, and a lot of them have to do with technology because knowledge is being increased. So we have a lot of very complex set of variables before us, and it makes sense when we're in an age of growing information. Words don't precede knowledge. Words explain knowledge. So as we create something, we have to create words to try and explain what it is. So as we come up with microprocessor, that was a word that was new when I was young. I was into capacitors, resistors. I could build an AM radio from scratch. How many people can build, if I were to give you all the component parts in a soldering station and say, build an AM radio, how many of you could do it? There are a few of us. There are several of us. Tom Diaz in Laurel could do it. I can still do it. I know what the power supply section and the preamp section and the amp section. I know how all that works. But I tell you this, I could not, if you gave me a bunch of microprocessors and said, put a CPU together, I wouldn't know how to do that. Because that's not my era. But somebody else coming along wouldn't know what a resistor and a diode was, but they would know how to work that microprocessor. The times are changing. From 2008 to 2016, we have doubled the number of words that we have. Turn to Matthew 24 again. So what can we get out of this message? I'm almost to the end. I told you it wouldn't be a long message today. I want to read what Matthew 24, verses 36 through 44 say. And I want you to think about this as we apply it to what we've read about society. Of that day and of that hour, Jesus Christ said, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. If Michael or Gabriel could come down and talk to us now, they wouldn't even know. Remember when Daniel asked Gabriel? Gabriel gave him a true answer. Shut the words up, seal it up, it's not for you to know. I don't even think that Gabriel knew. He just knew it wasn't then. But what will be happening in the world? Verse 37, as the days of Noah were, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. Now you think, oh, that can't be true. Noah's time? Give me a break. That didn't even have a radio. But think about what it's saying here. For as in the days before the flood, they will be eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, on the internet, but they're marrying and giving in marriage. 1 out of 6 is going to meet online this year. And they did not know that the flood came and took them all away. So will the coming of the Son of Man be. 2 will be in the field, 1 will be taken and the other left. 2 women will be grinding at the meal, 1 will be taken and the other left. Verse 42, watch therefore, for you don't know what hour your Lord is coming. Whatever the technology is that you're using, you can use that to keep your eyes on what's going on in the world. Watch, verse 43. But know this, if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. For you kids out there, your parents are trying to teach you to set, and I say this, I mean this really, set the Game Boy down and pick the Android or the iPad up and use it for good use. We're not saying don't use technology, but don't fill your head with stuff that's not going to help you see what's happening in the world and the signs of the time. Use it for wisdom. If the master had known what time the thief would come, he would have been watching. Verse 44, therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming in an hour that you don't expect. How can this happen? Especially with all this information that's at our disposal. We can get instantaneous information on what's going on in China right now. A bomb goes off in North Korea, and it's on Fox.com and CNN.com within 30 seconds. If that's true, how can people be lulled into not listening to what's going on in the world? How can you have all this but not observe the signs that are before them? Again, remember what it says, Michael said in Daniel chapter 12, they weren't listening to the watchman. I'm going to put that scripture back up here in just a minute. We have to be watching, we have to be learning, we have to be listening. Let's go back to Daniel 12 and let's read that. I said I would go back to this. This was the very first slide that I put up. Think about that in terms of what we've talked about today. At that time, at the return of Christ, Michael will stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. Do you realize what that means? It means that the people of God have got an archangel that's watching out for them right now. The protection that we have as members of the body of Jesus Christ allows us to be under the protection of that man that's wielding that sword, that angel that's wielding that sword. But there will be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. There's a time that's coming that'll be worse than anything that has ever been seen. At that time, your people will be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book. At that time, right before the return of Jesus Christ, many who are asleep in the dust of the earth will awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise, who use the information wisely, will shine like the brightness of the firmament. and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. Our job is to not only get ourselves turned to righteousness, to become a light, but that we need to then become a light for other people. As the world keeps going, and the world keeps learning, and the world keeps developing, it's going to get further and further away from the simplicity of the truth of God. Go back to that very simple thing that Jesus Christ showed us, the fig tree. Is the forest so impressive around you that you stopped looking at the individual trees? There are two types of knowledge that will be available at the time of the end. There's going to be this world's knowledge that we've seen ever increasing right up to the return of Jesus Christ, as described in Daniel chapter 2. The amount of information out there is amazing. It's fun. It's exciting. It's really neat to be able to read all these cool things that are being developed. But there's another type of knowledge that is available, and it's the knowledge of the way of God. Now, you can get that through technology, or you can get that through reading a newspaper, or you can get that through a TV or a radio program, or you can get it through an itinerant preacher that's walking from town to town. The information is there, but we have to be ready for it. Daniel chapter 2, verses 20 through 23, last scripture. Daniel answered and said, "Blessed is the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his." You know, God has the ultimate technology. All the stuff that we come up with that we think is so cool, he probably thinks is a little kid with an erector set. But we think it is really neat, and he is so much higher than that, brethren. Verse 21, he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings. He raises kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those that have understanding. If you want to tap into the real source of knowledge and the real source of information, you tap into what God has to offer, who is above all of the technology that this world has to give us. Verse 22, he reveals deep and secret things. He knows what is in the darkness, and he dwells in the light. I thank you and praise you, O God of my fathers, for you have given me wisdom and might and have now made known to me what I have asked of you. As this world continues to increase its explosion of information, I want you to remember something. The wise will be asking God for this knowledge, and it will lead them to eternal life. The wise will stop looking at the blossoms in the forest and will start looking at the blossoms on the individual trees and see what is happening in the world and how that will affect the return of Jesus Christ. The wise will understand the sign of the times, and they will be able to make knowledge and prophecy together, to where as the age comes to a close, we will be ready for whatever Jesus Christ has for us to do, because we've been watching, we've been waiting, we've been learning about the ways of Jesus Christ.